We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed,
aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Approved.
Okay, we were able to accomplish that. It was borderline on a question, but I think we got to where we needed to go. So, Steve, I assume we are recording at this point in time?
Yes.
Okay, well, good afternoon, everyone. As Steve mentioned, please mute your line if you are not speaking. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-19-220, Northern States Power Company Integrated Resource Plan. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. So we do have a quorum. Again, I would just say welcome. Thank you for attending this meeting and participating via webcam/interactive video, however you want to put it. The sign of the times, obviously. So I appreciate everyone getting on the line and doing it in this fashion, and I think it will be effective. So that would be the extent of my opening comments, Commissioner Fedorchuk.
I look forward to the discussion today. Thank you for all the background information that was provided ahead of time. I think it's an important subject, and I'm looking forward to a good conversation with the company. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Christman?
No additional comments, Mr. Chairman. Ready to get started.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant does go first in this type of proceeding. I see that you have the PowerPoint. It's up on the screen that I believe we are all seeing. So with that said, in terms of introductions, Steve or Jack, do we, because it could be a little clunky, we're not going around the room, but I believe everyone has identified on the screen. Will that suffice?
I think since the record is recorded, Commissioner, that it would be good to just go around the room and get the names. And you could just read them off the screen and then ask for the additional people who are available over the phone.
Okay. Maybe I will leave that to you, Mr. Cedarquist, if you will introduce the folks that are on the line from your organization, please.
Sure. We have with us Chris Shaw, Manager of Regulatory Policy, and Chris works closely with our resource planners. We also have Carrie Hassler, Senior Manager of Market Operations, and Randy Capra, General Manager of Power Generation. Those three will be providing the presentation today.
Okay, I believe we're ready to get started, so I will turn it over to you. I don't know if there is a, typically as you're presenting and when it's in person, we'll have questions, the commissioners will. As you proceed through the presentation, I think I will just leave it to you to ask as you complete each slide. I'm trying to think of the best way to do this so it doesn't, we're not overlapping because we can't, I guess we would see if our mics went live, correct, Steve?
Pardon, say that again.
We would see that our mics, someone's mic is live. I'm referring to Commissioner Fedorchuk or Commissioner Christman if they should have a question.
Yes.
Okay, why don't we use that and try that in terms of if one of us should light up green on our mic, that we would have a question related to that slide. Does that sound fair?
That sounds good.
All right, it's all yours.
All right, well, thank you, Commissioner Crotchis. And actually, it's good to see everyone again. Back in December of 2019, we provided the commission with an informational filing regarding an Xcel Energy proposal to offer two of our coal-fired generating units, the Sherco 2 unit and the Allen S. King plant, into the MISO market on a seasonal basis. I believe it was Commissioner Fedorchuk who inquired if the commission could hear more about this proposal. So we endeavored to find a date, and I think it took quite a bit more time than we thought it would. And I never really imagined that we'd be doing this virtually and I'd be sitting in my home, but here we are. So Chris and Carrie and Randy will be talking about this plan. I'm from their homes, and I'm going to be running the slides here, and we'll do my best. But if there are questions, we'll do our best to answer them along the way. So I'm going to hand it off to Chris Shaw.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Everybody hear me? Mm-hmm. Well, great, and thank you, commissioners, for providing some time for the discussion on this topic. Dave, you can go to the next slide. All right, just a quick agenda of the topics we're gonna go through on the slides today. I'll provide some of the background and the seasonal commitment proposal. Carrie will talk about the related MISO issues, and then Randy will talk about the O&M and capital savings at the plants and the fuel cost impacts. So next slide, if you could, Dave. All right, so here are the two units. On the left, that's actually the entire Sherco facility. Sherco 2 is in the middle. Sherco 2 is a 765 megawatt coal-fired power plant. We're currently planning to retire that plant in 2023. The right is the AS King plant, approximately 560 megawatt coal-fired power plant as well. And in the current resource plan, we propose to retire that plant in 2028. Of course, currently in North Dakota, the depreciation lives for those plants haven't been adjusted, so the depreciation lives still extend into the 2030s. I'm going to go to the next slide. All right, some background on kind of the current environment that the plants are operating in. I think as you all know, there've been significant wind additions in the region, including additions by Xcel. So that wind is adding a lot of energy into the system. Natural gas prices continue to remain low, and so in some cases, gas-fired generation can be competitive with coal-fired generation. Next bullet here on the MISO market design, Carrie will talk in more detail on this in some later slides, but just quickly, the way the current MISO construct works, units are committed on a day-ahead basis. So that means MISO is looking one day ahead to determine whether or not to commit a unit. And so that doesn't work well with units like Sherco 2 and King to be sort of potentially on and off from day to day. They have minimum downtimes. And so historically, we've been able to address that by operating these plants as must run, meaning there's a minimum level that they operate at, sort of regardless of market pricing. And historically, that has been an economic way to operate the plants. But the changes in the market have made that to be less economic during large parts of the year. And so we've analyzed both changing from the you know, a scenario where we would must run the plants to a scenario where we would commit the plants on an economic basis, as well as the scenario where we would operate them on a seasonal basis. And so by seasonal basis, what we mean is we would actually idle the plants during the fall and the spring. So March to May in the spring, and September to November in the fall.
Chris, I do have a question.
Yep,
on slide four, please. Can you give me a few more sentences on the significant renewable requests? Are you talking from a corporation standpoint, from a consumer standpoint, or just simply getting those resources onto the grid?
Oh, you know, we're making kind of noting the significant amounts of interconnection requests in the MISO queue for additional wind resources in the region.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Commissioner Chrisman, I think I heard you first.
Chris, when in current operations, when you must run them, I assume that's not at 765 and 560 megawatts. So what's kind of your low end must run volume that you run these at?
My opinion is it's generally about half. I'd actually let Randy Capper be a great resource. He operates the plant, so he could probably tell you a little more.
Hi, Chris. Hi, commissioners. This is Randy Capper. Yeah. So for Sherco, they have a much better turndown. They can get down to like 260, 270 megawatts. King, because of the construction of the boiler and how it taps the slag, it can only get that. It's a 550 megawatt unit. The low limit on that is 380.
Thank you.
Hey, Commissioner Fedorchak.
Yeah, Chris, or I think you said Carrie might be the one to talk about the MISO issues, but how would changing the day ahead construct of the current market design to more of a multi-day or like a week ahead, how would that affect the potential economics of these plants?
Yeah, this is Terry Hassler. I can answer that, Commissioner Fedorchak, and we'll get into that a little bit more too. But currently, if you narrow down the scope, just looking at the start cost, the MISO market is optimizing the start cost over one day. But these units typically need to run for multiple days. So by optimizing just the start cost over multiple days, you're going to get more efficient commitments for these long lead, higher cost units than we currently have today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I'll save the rest of my questions on this until later when we talk about that. Thank you.
Perfect.
Okay, on to slide five here. So our proposal is to begin the seasonal operations this fall of 2020. And we've done that analysis out through 2023. We would economically commit the units then in the summer and the winter. We've modeled the impacts using a dispatch model and so have forecasts of what we expect those impacts to be. We'll monitor our actual results and impacts and potentially make adjustments to the operational plans based on our actual experience. So you can flip to the next one. And so in the spring and the fall, while the plants will be idle, we'll still have the ability to restart those for a number of reasons. And those could be to maintain system reliability for environmental or other testing to comply with MISO tariff or federal law, or if market prices significantly increased above what we were expecting, and so that we would need to bring those back on in order to prevent cost increases to customers. And then last bullet here on the flexibility, at least for this year, we do need to have either Sherco 1 or Sherco 2 online. So even though we plan to idle Sherco 2 in the fall, if for some reason Sherco 1 was offline, we would run Sherco 2.
And I believe Commissioner Fedorchak, do you have a question? Okay, Julie, did you have a question? Okay, apparently.
Sorry, I was gonna, I'm sorry. I've got two mutes going, so I'll try to be consistent. I was just curious if why it had one of them had to be on, but I see it in the text here, so I got it. Thank you.
Sorry. Okay, so with slide 7, we get into some of the MISO issues, and so I'll turn it over to Carrie at this point.
Thanks, Chris. And sorry, for some reason my video is not working, so I apologize for that. So just to kind of bring in the MISO market on this and the impacts that the market is having on this decision and some background on how the market functions. MISO links their capacity market to the energy market through a must offer requirement. So any units that are used for the fixed resource adequacy plan or that clear in the planning reserve auction are required to offer into the energy and operating reserve markets. If those, if a unit does not clear in the PRA or is not used in the FRAP, then that must offer requirement is not in effect. And we were able in the last PRA that cleared, so this is for the 2020-2021 planning year, we did not use King or Sherco 2 for our fixed resource adequacy plan, and they did not clear in the PRA. So therefore, we do not have a must offer requirement for those units through May of 2021. But as Chris said, our plan is to utilize those resources when they're most needed by the market, and that's in the summer and the winter months. So we will offer those units economically during those months, and during the shoulder season when those units are not economic to run, we plan to not offer those units into the market. Go to the next slide, please, Dave.
Carrie, real quick before you move on. Mm-hmm. Now, MISO's been seeing some pretty significant needs during the shoulder seasons. Is this subject mm-hmm. to change depending on market conditions? So if there's like a call for more resources in on a day in the shoulder, will you guys bring these back or not? They're going to be...
We will absolutely bring them back if there's reliability needs. And we've worked with MISO operations to understand how they would communicate that need with us. But we can also be proactive too. And through our modeling, if we see, you know, abnormal weather or some load issues in the near future, we'll call MISO and ask them, hey, you know, our modeling is telling us you may need these in the next few days. Do you want us to start them? So we're absolutely available for reliability issues.
Okay, and then your staffing is on board as needed to run the facilities?
Yes, and Randy will talk about that a little bit more during his section of the presentation.
Very good, thank you.
You're welcome. So there's some caveat to the must offer. You know, it, things can change, right? MISO tariff can be revised. There's a tariff change proposal in place now to remove the physical holding withholding exemption from non-capacity resources. So those are resources that don't clear the PRA or are used for a FRAP. We know that if we move into this type of offer strategy, that there's a lot of work to do with the IMM up front. We have to show the IMM that this is an economic decision, and that the, you know, economics will, that we estimate are reasonable. So there's a lot of work that we have to do up front to ensure that the IMM is comfortable with this and MISO is aware of what our plans are. And the other thing that can change is the, you know, capacity position, change in PRA pricing, LMR revisions to capacity accreditation. You know, MISO's working on capacity accreditation and trying to align the capacity accreditation that resources with that resources receive with their availability. So there's a lot of things that can happen, but we feel comfortable for this upcoming planning year that this offer strategy will work. Next slide, please. So like Chris said, historically, we just offered the coal units as must run, and that made sense historically. The market was set up when there were a lot of baseload units, LMPs were higher. And so because the market was not designed to allow those units to offer their operating characteristics, must run was a simple solution. So just keep the units on, they're baseload units. The LMPs are high enough to cover the production cost, and life was good. But now as prices have dropped, lower gas prices, load has not increased as it was early on, the LMPs aren't high enough to support running these units all the time. And when you offer them as must run, you don't receive the make-whole payments to cover your production costs. So there's every time you start a unit and if you're must running it, if you're self-committing it, you eat that start cost. And then if LMPs are low, you aren't guaranteed to recover those production costs. Now, that being said, when we did must run the units, we were only self-committing them. We were still offering MISO the flexibility to dispatch between our EcoMin and our EcoMax. And we have done a lot of work with Randy's groups to decrease the turndown rate. So like Sherco, I think now we can turn it down for a limited number of hours in the day to 216 megawatts, which helps even more, right? Because if the unit is already on, we can turn it down even lower as LMPs are low and then bring it on. So we've done a lot of work around that area too to make these units more efficient. However, we're still in a situation where must running them all the time is not economically feasible, especially in the shoulder seasons. So we started offering the King and one of the Sherco units, either Sherco 1 or 2, depending on what was going on out there, as an economic status, and allowing the market the majority of the time to pick them up if they needed them. So then you can see in the third bullet here the number of hours that the units have been in reserve shutdown. So reserve shutdown is the unit is off because the market does not need them for economics. So if a unit, say a unit is picked up for economics, it runs, and then the market decides they don't need that unit anymore, and that unit sits idle, then that's counted as a reserve shutdown hour. So you can see the number of hours there for each unit in reserve shutdown since last summer, late last summer. Okay, next slide, please. So that gets us to the market design issues that really need to be transitioned to quickly. And we've been working with MISO and proposing a multi-day commitment for years. And we feel the time is now to help these longer lead resources optimize their remaining life through a multi-day commitment. MISO has looked at the benefits of this, and the savings are $30 to $45 million per year on the production cost. And that's simply because they're optimizing these longer lead, longer runtime resources over multiple days instead of just one day. So once a unit that's expensive to start is started, they would say, okay, we need that unit for 3 days. So yes, it's good. We're good to start. We can allocate that start cost over 3 days. But when you just look at one day, it's very difficult to optimize these resources. Mike has also talked about a forward market mechanism in the market subcommittee that may have some potential, but we still feel that the multi-day commitment is the way to go. In the interim, before the multi-day commitment is implemented, designed and implemented, one of the other offer parameters that we feel is critical is the minimum runtime offer parameter. So currently, the minimum runtime for the offers is capped at 24 hours. And all of our units, and I would probably guess that most across the footprint, have to run longer than 24 hours due to emissions requirements. So what this does when it's capped at 24 hours is it creates a situation where if one of our units is economically committed for 24 hours, then we have to must run the unit as a price taker for the next 2 or 3 days. So again, it's another way to help optimize over multiple days instead of pushing the risk back onto the market participant and being the price taker for multiple days after their unit is economically committed. So I'm open to any questions before I turn it over to Randy.
I have another question, Carrie. Are there, not to get into the nitty-gritty of the MISO dealings, but are there stakeholders in MISO that are opposing the multi-day commitment? And, I know there's been lots of groups advocating for this for a long time. Why is it taking so long to get this going from your perspective?
Yeah. MISO has fallen back on the market system enhancement. Not necessarily that the systems need to be in place, need to be updated to do this. It's more, well, the personnel resources that are working on the market system enhancement would be the same ones that would be working on this design. So that is one area. The other area is that MISO is a little uncomfortable with their forecast for load and wind. And so they're trying to, for multiple days out, so they're trying to improve those forecast through the multi-day operating margin, which I understand, but unfortunately, their leaning on that is not helpful because that process is not at a small enough detail. It's footprint wide, showing what's the capacity margin for the next 7 days. It's footprint wide, and so it doesn't get down into the zonal requirements as much as it needs to be. Now, as far as stakeholders that do support or don't support, we provided a white paper in February of 2019, and there were several stakeholders, 10, 11 on there that supported it. I tend to think that the smaller utilities, more of those like in the TDU sector, seem to be opposed to this. And I think it's because they don't foresee that they are changing their unit operations and their offer strategies. So I think we've been at the forefront of this because we realize that we can't continue to must run our units the way that we have been. And this provides us an alternative to optimize their remaining life instead of just running them into the ground. And I would be happy to share that white paper with you as well, if you're interested.
I would love that. Thank you. I would appreciate seeing that.
Okay.
And that to you. And I think that concludes my questions for you for now. Thanks.
Commissioner Crispin, did you have any questions?
Well, I may, but I think I could frame them a lot better for Carrie after we hear from Randy. So I just would ask, I hope that you'll stay on until later, Carrie.
Yes, I will.
All right. Thank you, commissioners. Thank you for your time. Good afternoon. Again, my name is Randy Capra. I'll be walking through the next several slides. So this slide that we have up is seasonal versus economic. Certainly something that we worked through as we were discussing this process last year with all the stakeholders. As noted, I'll go through O&M savings, capital savings, impact to labor, which there will be, as far as seasonal operation, there'll be no impact to labor, lower emissions, and then the fuel cost impacts. Next slide. So O&M and capital cost savings, seasonal commitment certainly offers the operational certainty, and that's kind of where we get our certainly our capital savings. If we are offering the units in economically, as we have in the past, it's extremely difficult to take out capital projects unless you have a commitment that you know you're going to be off for 6 months out of the year. So as I step through these bullet points, O&M savings results, as we looked at the savings from seasonal operation, an estimate for 2020 to 2023 would be about $13.3 million. That's chemical reduction over time material. To talk about labor here for a bit. So as we are in economic offer every day, if operators call in sick or operators take vacation, we do backfill those positions so they're filled with overtime. If we're in a seasonal position, we can certainly look at that with a different lens. Capital investments, much easier to get your arms around. Certainly if you know for 6 months that you're going to be offline, projects that are in the queue that could be pushed off or actually eliminated. Our estimate for 2023 is, or 2020 to 2023, is savings of $12.3 million. This Sherco 2, which has a retirement date of 2023, very little savings in capital as we were getting closer to the end. We certainly pull projects from capital projects from that unit.
Randy?
There are no questions. Yes, sir.
So on that point, and this is one of the things I guess I wasn't clear on from the beginning, like the retirement date of 2023, are you talking about that this is how you want to run it through 2023 and then retire it? Or does this change, if this is the new strategy for that plant, does this change that retirement date that it would run longer?
It does not change the retirement date. Now I can let Chris jump in if he wants to, but it does not change the retirement date of 2023, does not extend it. It just gives us more predictability around the costs for Unit 2.
All right, thank you.
I have a question too, Randy.
Yes, Commissioner.
And that is, so if you're having these units down for maintenance, et cetera, how are they then available to, you know, address kind of immediate needs or predicted needs that might come up in the shoulder season, as Carrie had just mentioned earlier, that the units would be available to help serve those needs if you've got it shuttered for 6 months?
Sure. Okay. So if I understand the question, and if I don't answer it properly, please restate it. But so for King, a single unit in Bayport, Minnesota, 550 megawatt supercritical unit, if it goes into seasonal operation this fall, it comes off September, October, November, we would not be performing maintenance on that unit. We would take it offline. We would lay it up in a long-term state. But as Carrie mentioned, if the markets change, and typically we have, they don't change on a dime, we do have some heads up. So we could turn the unit around, within a few days. So there won't be any major, if I understand your question correctly, there would be no major work going on any of these units that are in seasonal operation.
Okay. Thank you. That was the clarification I needed.
And while we're kind of off on questions, what's the operational employee numbers of each of these plants, approximately?
How many are employed?
Correct.
Okay, Commissioner, thank you. For King Plant, the number's around 70 employees. That's operators, maintenance, electricians, INC, coal yard personnel, management employees. That's a single unit, again, in Bayport, Minnesota. Sherco 03 is a little more fluid, right, because there's three units and they share maintenance and they share electricians and they share INC. But as far as operators go, it's in the neighborhood of, 30 operators.
So we'll use King then as a easier example. Under the new model,
exactly,
you're still going to have your 70 employees. You'll save,
yes,
some labor costs in that if somebody's absent, you won't call in anyone else on overtime in those 6 off months. But the employees continue to do what they're during those 3 months. I mean, sometimes there'll be maintenance needs, but a plant doesn't need to be shut down half the time for maintenance, so there can't be that much work to be done.
Yep, clearly. A couple of opportunities. One would be to travel to other sites to support other units that may be in outages or forced outages would be one opportunity. The other one is, again, this would have to be negotiated, but we're certainly laying the groundwork or foundation and working towards multi-skilling. So our position is that during these 6 months when the unit is idle would be a perfect time to start training operators, maintenance, electricians, INC, coal yards, certainly that have a skill set that could be improved with multi-skilling. And if we know we're going to be off for 3 months at a chunk, we wouldn't have to bring people in on overtime for training. We could work around their schedules. So a couple of different prongs there. You know, one, certainly support other sites, and then work with the locals to get in multi-skilling.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Randy, I have a couple of questions for you. Can you tell me as a percent of operating costs, what percentage labor is approximately?
Well, it's certainly half.
And so a significant portion of the plant's expense would be tied to labor?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So with that said, I think if I get, I think on some of the future slides, you talked about reducing employees through attrition over the course of time. No layoffs, but
yes,
staff reductions due to attrition, correct?
Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, Commissioner.
Okay, does that mean you're overstaffed right now currently?
Oh, no, it probably could have been written a little clearly, and I don't want to put it together. So the attrition part is certainly we're not overstaffed. I mentioned at 70, if you look 5 years ago, we're probably staffed around 120. So we have certainly refined scope of work and what we work on. But what that would entail is certainly through attrition is that we would, again, work with the local union, which is Local 23 at Sherco and 160 at Sherco. Sherco already has this in place. They have temporary a workforce. So as people retire or take different positions, we don't backfill with a full-time benefit employee that in a few years will, you know, would have to make some tough decisions. We get in place with the union, temporary work agreements. And we haven't had those at King, but King is still out of the way, it's 2028. But that would be our goal, is to get a temporary work agreement. And then as employees find work within Excel and transmission, distribution, gas, or other sites, combined cycle sites or RDF sites, then we'd backfill them with temporary workforce. Did that answer your question, Commissioner?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I will go on to the next slide, which I believe is slide 13. Some other benefits, certainly CO2, you can see the numbers, 17.5 million to 22 million tons during this period. Seasonal commitment, we kind of talked about this, does not reduce number of employees. We're not laying anyone off. We certainly have invested a lot in these employees, and they're fantastic employees. We want to train them up for the next stage of their life or their career with Excel if they choose to stay with the company or if they're not at retirement age. So I did talk about this a bit. We're certainly would look for multi-skilling or other job enhancements to keep them, their skills prepared for the next, once Cole is over at King and Sherco. Questions on 13?
You mentioned the CO2 emissions. What fuel do you use to start the boiler when you've let it be stopped?
Sure. King is a supercritical, so it does start on natural gas, very little, very short time. And if your next question is how long is it on natural gas, probably 5 to 10 minutes before the coal ignites. So very short time on gas, and King cannot burn natural gas as opposed to coal. Sherco, which is a different style boiler, can fire longer on natural gas, but it typically does not. Once we're in startup mode, it's usually about a half hour.
But it has also started with natural gas?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, I will go to, if you go to slide 14. So we, as we were putting this together, we ran a couple different scenarios with the must run versus economic commit versus seasonal commit, scenario one, scenario two. Certainly, if you have the must run commit, which Carrie had talked about earlier, versus the economic commit, there's tremendous amount of savings, basically, and depending on the LMP. When you get to scenario two with the economic compared to seasonal commit, the savings are much smaller, as one would imagine. I think Carrie or someone had in their slides earlier about how long King Plant and Sherco have been in reserve shutdown. So that gives you the fuel cost comparison. If there's no questions on that, I'll go to slide 15. This is really just an example we put in here on an economic commit versus if we're in seasonal operations. So kind of step through these bullet points. So Sherco 1 and 2 were offered as a must run for February and March. Really, Sherco 3 has been in an overhaul since February, doing a major overhaul on the unit, looking at the removing the LP rotor and inspecting blades. So with Sherco 1 and 2 in a must run, and that was our choice, we chose to put them on a must run. And then looking back at the data for February and March, we certainly were out of the money a good portion of the time. So we made a decision with ComOps help looking at their models. And certainly with the prices low, LMPs low, their models showed that if we offered one of the Sherco units as economic, that it would be off for, we thought, several weeks. So we did offer Sherco 2 as an economic. It was decommitted in the MISO market on a Friday. Our intent or our thoughts were that that unit would be off for multiple weeks. It was picked up because of capacity on Sunday. And again, that's what we're trying to avoid. We're trying to avoid these startups, these shutdowns and startups, extremely hard on the equipment, trying to get as much longevity out of these units as we can. Certainly hard on personnel to cycle these units. So I guess the point in this slide is that if the unit was in a seasonal operation, it's much more predictable than in an economic economic offer where it does, they do cycle.
Randy, quick question. So it looks there as if what Carrie was talking about, that this is an example of the minimum run time, putting it, kind of crimping the economics. If you didn't have that and didn't have to be a price taker for 2 days in order to get your, you know, 72 hours of minimum runtime, then it might not have been such a economic hit. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think I understand you. Yeah, I think, yes, I agree with your point. From a power plant perspective, we're certainly looking at the equipment, and the worst thing you can do with these is especially the coal units, well, the coal units really are to start them up and shut them down in I don't know. Carrie, do you have anything to add?
Well, I must admit you were breaking up a little bit there, but I think what you were saying was, yes, Commissioner Fedorchak, that would have eased the economic burden on us. But what Randy was saying was there, we still had the issue with turning the plants around quickly, calling in employees for overtime so they were on site when to start the unit. And the other issue that we had at this time was, you know, this was in early April, and COVID, we were smack dab in the first weeks of the COVID-19 operations. And so we were trying to deal with, you know, mitigation of cross-contamination of the personnel. So that was definitely an issue too. You know, loads were lower, gas prices were extremely low. We were very surprised when MISO started the unit, but it was more, looking back, it was more a function of MISO's forecast was off. Which is somewhat understandable because load was dropping pretty quickly at that time because of the COVID-19. But it just kind of brings forth the, you know, the need to get the forecast right, the need to look out multiple days. If MISO would have been looking out multiple days in this scenario, they never would have committed Sherco to. It ran for right. The two days following the economic commitment, it ran at their minimum.
And is there talk about changing that minimum runtime cap? Is that part of some of the market changes being discussed?
Yeah, we requested that last year through the integrated roadmap, and MISO pushed that into the forward market mechanism conversation. So that's in the market subcommittee.
Okay.
So
thank
would
you.
Love to have OMS support on that.
Yeah, I'll look at that. Thank you.
Sure. Any other
that's
questions?
All I think this next slide. Yeah, that's all I have.
Yeah, that completes our presentation, commissioners. So any other follow-up questions are welcome.
I don't know who would be the right one to answer these questions, so I'll address it to any of you. But can you give me the approximate amount of annual megawatt hours that have been generated by each of these plants in recent years? And then what you're expecting will be the case in the future under this model, and then also the cost per megawatt hour in the past and in the future.
So I don't think we've got that data offhand, but we would have it in the modeling work that we did for the petition, so we could get that data to you, Commissioner.
Okay, that'll be fine. Thank you.
And as far as the production costs, I think you were asking, you know, what's the difference going to be now and in the future, if I understood you correctly.
Per megawatt hour. I mean, and I don't want it broken down necessarily, but, you know, certainly your labor costs per megawatt hour will be higher. There might be other things that'll be lower, but just generally what you expect your costs will be going from must run to a seasonal status.
Okay. Yeah, that would probably be best to pull out of the modeling too. Thank you for that clarification.
I have another general question for whoever wants to chime in, but to what extent is the company's decision in terms of their retirement dates influenced by economics versus reduction in emissions? So I'm trying to get a feel for some of these market changes were in place that allowed for more economic operations of these facilities, would the company be looking at running them longer towards their, you know, their expected life, more closer to the time that North Dakota is depreciating them, or how does this, the economics, factor into your retirement decisions?
Commissioner Fedorchuk, I can take a shot. So, you know, for King, for example, the change in the retirement date for King is a proposal in the pending resource plan. And so I think it's driven by, you know, economics, but also our some of our company goals around carbon reduction. So I think, you know, we've had done a lot of analysis in that docket, and we've worked with your staff actually on doing some additional analysis on different sorts of assumptions, on how different assumptions can impact that decision. We're planning to file a supplement in that resource plan on June 30th. And I think the plan is to incorporate this assumption of seasonal commitment in the analysis that we're doing in the resource plan. That said, I you know, I don't think, at least at this point, we're planning on looking at, you know, we're still using those same dates for analysis, like looking at 2028 for King as opposed to the current 2037. So I don't think we'll be looking at kind of additional variations in combination with economic commitment.
I have a question related to, you know, when I'm looking at all of this, and you know, it's more than just one component. But when I look at the depreciation, for example, you're depreciating one or retiring it 9 years ahead of schedule, the other 11 years ahead of schedule. I don't know what that means to ratepayers in terms of what you would envision in terms of a recovery period for that amount, how much it would be per month. But the argument you would be making, obviously, would be that it would be cost consumers less to just pay the undepreciated amount than it, as compared to, it's cheaper to add new resources in terms of generation and or market purchases, the transmission related and beyond the interconnect, but just to what the additional cost of the grid overall. And that still is more economical, I'm assuming that that's the argument you're going to be making in terms of why consumers should ultimately cover the depreciation of those units. And it just seems like it's a steep hill to climb. Will we see something comprehensive to that extent in terms of why this would be beneficial?
So I think so. So in the resource plan, we have been looking at different scenarios, comparing the sort of current dates for those plants with the accelerated retirement dates, and so that, you know, does incorporate the impacts of the accelerated depreciation associated with moving up the retirement date. I hope so. I mean, I hope we're able to make that case and provide the data that is helpful to you, commissioners.
Good, thank you. Commissioner Christman, I see your mic is live. Did you have a question? I see your mic is not live. You don't have a question. So Sorry, Commissioner. No, that's fine. Commissioner Fedorchak, do you have any more questions?
I don't, but this has been very helpful. Thank you for bringing together a knowledgeable team, Dave, to address these questions and provide insight onto the company's plans here, and also get me educated on a bunch of MISO things that I thought I understood, but now I understand them better.
You're welcome.
Okay, anything further from the company before I go into the closing portion? Okay, sensing none. Jack, you may have to help me out a little bit. So the evidence as presented, which would include the audio recording as well as the PowerPoint presentation, are now considered evidence. Jack, would we also have to consider the white paper that Commissioner Fedorchak has requested?
Yes, we can receive that at a later date. So just leave the record open to receive that white paper that was specified.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we'll leave the record open to accomplish that. The other two pieces of information, the audio as well as PowerPoint, as mentioned, are now considered evidence. Are there any objections to those becoming a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made? Jack or Mr. Hsu?
Some staff.
Okay. Mr. Cedarquist?
No.
Okay, thank you. And those components are now considered evidence upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the commission at this point in time? Okay, sensing none, this informal hearing on case number PU-19-220 is now closed. And Steve, I will wait for you to cue me up to start the next one.